I was back in LA for 4 days, and already I'm off on the road again. On this week's podcast, an update on my new potential parenting partner, and the second part of my interview with the absolutely gorgeous, physically and mentally, infinite love member Denise, helping this creepy British guy find his place in the world. It's my unconventional life, en route to joy.
I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is My Unconventional Life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way, it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? Way of things for a while now, being away from LA for work a lot. As much as I love LA, I really don't mind it at all. I guess it's still new and exciting to me, and it means when I am back in LA, I don't have to work a regular job and can fully enjoy living in the greatest city in the world. It does, however, present somewhat of a question when it comes to the notion of being a parent. I mean, people do it. And it's not the schedule that some guys have, at least thus far, where they're away 5 days of the week. But it does add another layer of complexity to it. And something to really consider when thinking how it will affect the life of my child. On that subject, I got to meet up with my new potential parenting partner twice in the short time I was back. It shows, like Supermum said, how much easier it is when you do live close. I truly believe that if she and I had lived that close, we'd probably be having kids now. Anyway, we taped an interview that will air on here in a couple of weeks. I think I can call her by a real name as I use it in the interview. So Eri, or Eri, as it's pronounced in Japanese, is on paper pretty good. I mean, 3 miles up the road from me, financially stable, has a strong support system of friends nearby, is open-minded and has experience with non-traditional relationships. I guess it's just so soon to be thinking about having children with someone, irrespective of who it is. But the reality is that at 37, she doesn't want to wait much longer, and if she doesn't find someone in the next few months or so, is going to use donor sperm. That's a real issue with these websites, I feel. You know, by the time girls get on there, it's oftentimes the last hope for them, and they often don't have the time to really make a long thought out decision. Which Eri says is fine, because she really believes in intuition and going with her instinct. But to be honest, and I said as much to her, I'm really just giving a lot of thought as to whether I want to be a parent at all. I mean, last year, I was sure. I felt settled in Los Angeles, in the sense that I had a career there that could at least pay my bills and in time more. And I think I felt deep down that dating-wise, things would remain as slow as they had for most of my adult life. But now, neither of those things are the case. I could be away a lot with my new gig. And dating-wise, it seems there are opportunities, whether I follow through with them or not, that I never could have imagined a year ago. And this all came from, I think, just owning and embracing who you really are without apology, in positivity. But I feel so excited and comfortable in my life right now, and I'm questioning if I want to make such a life-changing decision right now. It doesn't really have anything to do with the girl in question. It's just ironic that this opportunity only came up now. Well, whatever happens, I am going to be mindful and have faith that whatever decision I make, it will be the right one. Because this life has already been written. I'm just playing my part, reading the book,
and loving every single moment. This week's interview is the second part of my interview with Infinite Love Denise. I am so impressed with her. She speaks so eloquently from such a kind, intelligent, and interested place that it just warms your heart. Although, to be perfectly honest, the first time I did have sex probably wasn't wasn't much to write home about anyway. Oh, it was dreadful. It was like 45 seconds, like three strokes. It was like a bad game of tennis. It was like you know what was beautiful about it? Like the next morning when I came down for breakfast, I thought I was Don Juan. Like I could have had a smoking jacket and a pipe, you know. But it speaks volumes because back then, I mean, I don't know if I even knew what a clitoris was when I was like 18. Mm. Probably not. Certainly not in that experience. But now, once you get older as a guy and you read Cosmo and et cetera, it all becomes like, how long can you last and how many orgasms can you give a girl? And it becomes almost like ticking these boxes and you get away from what should be.
Creates a lot of pressure.
Yeah, what should be an organic experience, mm-hmm. right? Like, have you ever had sex and not had an orgasm and felt like, yeah, that was okay? Yep. Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you ever had sex, not had an orgasm and went, I'm glad that he didn't spend forever trying to get me off because it wasn't going to happen.
Yes. Right? Yeah, and I think a very good partner who can be okay.
Yes.
I can't be with someone who is obsessed with getting me off because then that puts a lot of pressure on me to have orgasms. And sometimes it's okay. I just like the process. I don't ever feel that it's a failure if we don't get off. And if the other person is so obsessed with that, then I feel like that's just kind of like a one-track kind of mind. I like someone who's a little bit more playful and creative. And there's so many other things to enjoy about another human than just hyper-focusing on that. Yeah.
Right. And let me ask you this, because in David Deida's book, The Way of the Superior Man, he talks about guys withholding ejaculation.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe only ejaculating once every 4 to 5 times that they have sex. If you have sex with a guy and he doesn't get off, is that weird?
It's a funny question. Anytime someone asks me about something sexual and asks, is it weird? I don't really think anything's weird sexually. Okay. If a guy doesn't get off, then if it's someone I know well, it's not a problem. I do date someone who has a very interesting ejaculation schedule. I don't know what you would call it. He does edging.
What's that?
Where he practices getting very close to orgasm doesn't.
Yeah.
And he knows his body well enough that if he knows he's not going to get off, then he'll just change it up. Maybe we'll take a break.
Uh-huh.
He'll go make some coffee. And I know that it's not done. We're not done for the day. He'll come back like after 5 or 10 minutes.
Right.
And I love that. It's great because it's being aware of your body and being okay with how it's functioning or not functioning.
Right.
If someone has trouble ejaculating, the last thing I want to do is stress the person out over it and make them feel bad about it.
But what if it's not trouble? What if they're choosing not to do it?
I think it's kind of a turn on.
Yeah.
For a guy to have that ability to do that and make that a conscious choice. Yeah. Because it just shows that it's not like, gotta get off every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've talked to girls that said the opposite, that like it's for a guy to get off is a turn on. And if they don't, they feel like somehow, you know, they've failed.
Right.
But it's interesting because if you hear someone say, a couple say, we had sex 30 times last night. It was crazy. What does that mean? That means the guy got off 30 times, right? Or how else do you identify one time of having sex?
Oh, well, I don't... that's a good question. I don't think that... So you say that one sexual experience, the time span is...
If someone says to you...
The end is when the guy gets off.
Yeah, if I say to you, hey, I had sex 5 times last night, what would that mean to you? I mean, how would I go, that's 1, that's 2, that's 3, that's 4, and that's 5? What designates...
Oh, I don't... I can have sexual intercourse 3 times in a night, and I have 3 orgasms, that's great.
But does that count as 3 times?
If the guy comes 3 times, as long as we're both happy and enjoyed the experience, and the guy hasn't come 3 times... I don't want to say I don't care, But there are men that will just kind of be like, okay, this is going to be a little too much effort to try and make this happen. Because after a guy ejaculates once, the second time, it generally takes a little bit longer for the guy.
Sure.
So if it's late at night and they're like, oh, I'm just kind of tired at this point. We've had a lot of fun, but let's go to sleep now. We've had sex twice. I've gotten off once. This is the guy saying this.
Wait. You've had sex twice.
Had sex twice in one night. Off he ejaculated the first time. Okay. But the second time.
Ah, of course, yeah.
He recognizes that it's going to take a lot of effort that maybe he doesn't want to put out for himself.
Yeah.
So that then we'll just go to sleep and then have sex in the morning. Give the guy some recovery time.
Right, okay. So it could be, it doesn't have to be the guy getting off, because in that situation, you could stop, you could go and, you know, watch TV and then start again, and that would be a new time.
Yeah, right? So it's. Yeah. I don't think it's invalid. I don't think sex is invalid if both parties don't have orgasms, but it's interesting that we talk about a period of sex when the guy gets off.
Yeah,
that it's based on him and what his needs are. Like, what about the female?
Right, phallocentric, yeah, absolutely.
What if I don't get off?
Right, fascinating, isn't it? Right.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine having sex with someone and then the person never gets off. I might ask them about it and have a conversation, but everyone's different. Everyone's unique, and everyone should be able to not feel bad. I just feel like people feel so much shame or feel bad about not performing.
Yeah.
And showing up.
There is a lot of that. And I think certainly from a guy's perspective as well, we have a lot of expectation for performance, right?
Right.
Yeah, that shouldn't necessarily be there. It's funny, because people always say, you know what, I had sex 7 times last night. I said, you should have done it right the first time. But that's me. I'm not a 7 time a night. I'm not a 7 time a week type of guy, to be honest with you. You know, like 7 times a month's probably about all right for me. I know, you know, I don't know. I'm still sort of trying to find my feet in that regard, you know. But I'm really happy that I feel like I'm on the right journey. I'm on the right path. And meeting people like you and being in groups where I meet other people who've, you know, had that sort of experience. I mean, let me ask you this. You've had a lot more experiences in the poly community than I have.
Mm.
Do you think that some of these play parties are something that I'd benefit from going to or not? And do I need to have a partner to go to them, or can you just go as a weird, creepy British guy?
Yeah, that's on the roster. Gay, straight, weird, creepy British guys. I think that if you have a curiosity and an open mind of being in an environment like that, I think everyone can benefit.
Yeah.
I think you just have to go and experience it, because if you don't, you kind of have this idea of what you think. It's like a swinger bar, or it's like any kind of private event.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe form your own opinions of what goes on there or what people are like. And once you actually put yourself in those rooms or those types of events, you realize that it's a very happy, safe space to be in.
Right.
Yeah, I find a lot of joy in those spaces.
Right, and you think I benefit from that?
You know, it might open your eyes to see that it's not this big taboo thing. Generally, the parties are, it's just a party. It's people being themselves and being in a safe space and being able to express themselves however they want. And if you choose to partake in any kind of adult activities, there is space for that.
Separate
outside
them.
Of the main.
Yeah, okay. Right. And I had been to one play party where I didn't get involved or anything. But I just wonder, and I don't know what the protocol is for interacting. Because for me, for example, if you meet a girl and you think she's attractive and she's with a boyfriend, how do you express that? Because you feel, I certainly feel, if I'm flirting with her and a boyfriend's there, that's very disrespectful. So
actually, to back up and answer your question, you can have your own partner, or you can have a buddy system. I could go with my partner, but invite you as my guest, and that therefore I would be responsible for your behavior. So
okay.
You can't be the creepy British guy lurking around the party. but I would basically be vouching for you that you're a cool person.
Gotcha.
And it's as if you're going to any other party and you want to just socialize with people.
Right.
It's not a pickup joint. I think because it's a lot of people that are in our community, that it's a lot of people that I know. So it's just like going to any normal party. And there's so much open-mindedness in that. And I don't actually know what the ratio is of monogamous to open poly swinger people are that go to this particular party that I've been to. But you're allowed to talk to anyone you want to. All you're doing is talking to people. Right. There's nothing expected.
I guess so, but to me, it's just, it seems so, it's kind of like, you ever go on a date, like a first date, and it just feels a little awkward because the expectation of, is this going to become sexual or not, is like there and it's rife. Whereas if you just meet someone in line at Starbucks, it's not there, so it feels more natural and organic to flirt or whatever else. And maybe that's just the sort of the British part of me that feels that sex is wrong and dirty. Part of this new epiphany that I've had is that it's not bad and it's not wrong, and to be openly sexual towards girls in a respectful manner is perfectly okay, because it's a beautiful, wonderful thing. To connect with someone on that level is fucking fantastic. It's one of the highest things we can do as human beings, you know. We shouldn't have to downplay and only do it, you know, in dark corners. Right. We should be able to be, you know, I mean, you don't have to lead with sex, maybe that's the wrong way of saying it, but leading with your sexuality I don't think is necessarily a terrible thing. But when I'm in those environments, I feel it, you know, and maybe I just need to go to more. Maybe after a certain amount of time, it would just come more naturally to me, perhaps.
So what, I want to make sure I understand. So you've been to a party before.
One, yeah.
And did you feel that you needed to be overtly sexual in that environment?
No. No, I didn't. And I was the opposite. I was as asexual and polite and hello. If you need condoms, here they are. You know, like completely. So much so that I felt, were I to ever try to become sexual in that environment, it would be such a huge gap that you just didn't feel comfortable,
right.
You know?
Right. Personally, I'm okay with sexuality in general, but I should clarify that for me, my own personal sexuality is my own thing. And I think I've definitely kept it close to me as far as not wanting to be overtly sexual in mainstream society. Just by being a woman, I'm going to be looked at as an object, I've learned. Yeah. So I have avoided putting out any kind of a sexual vibe generally when I meet people. So it's funny when you talk about first dates, I've actually often heard on a first date, people don't even know if I am interested at all because I won't flirt.
Right.
I've not in the past been a very flirtatious person because I am more focused on getting to know the person and having the person get to know me.
Right.
And if they can have the patience to get to know me as a person, and then the flirtation will come out later.
Okay.
But if someone's rushing me into trying to be flirtatious, that's a quick deal breaker for me.
Yeah.
At least in the past.
Right.
Before being in the poly community where I feel a lot more safe. Right. To express my sexuality. And I think that that's what might be good for you, is to be around it a little bit more, to realize that you can express it and it's welcomed. And it's, I keep referring it to a safe space because I feel that that's what I've needed.
Yeah.
Is a place where I can be sexual and I can be open with it and not feel overtly sexualized by people.
Right.
And I like actually having people look at me as a sexual being in those environments, because that's where it feels safe. I mean, the first time we went to the party, my mind was blown. I've had this epiphany at the party where I felt the same. I'm like, I'm going to go and just look around and see things and not participate, and this will be great.
Uh-huh.
And my partner and I agreed that if nothing physical happens, we're just going to be happy to be there. And I've always maintained that. I'm just happy to be in the room experiencing different things.
Yeah.
And when we really just enjoyed ourselves and kind of let loose a little bit, at one point I just kind of looked around like, this is my life right now. I can't believe this is amazing to let my guard down and go with the flow and enjoy the space. It was amazing.
Right. Because that's one of the things I'm really bad about, recognizing when girls like me. I'm terrible. I'm fucking like, unless a girl says, hey, I like you, you're really hot, let's have sex. And unless someone says that, I'm like, no, that's crazy.
I wouldn't hold my breath that's going to happen just in general. Not, I don't know too many women that are just
I've met a few.
That have just walked up, hey, you're cute, let's go have sex.
What are the...
I mean, sure, it happens, I'm sure.
It does. I love them for it. God bless them.
Well, any women out there who are listening to this now know how to approach you. How best to approach Nigel.
Right, except, you know, you still got to respect boundaries and not everybody's for everybody. But what are some giveaways? Like, what do you do? Like,
oh, God, I'm the wrong person to ask about this. As far as my signals of
when like what do girls do in general? I've heard.
I think I'm a bit of an exception to the rule. I think I'm not.
Well, okay. Take your relationship now. Mm-hmm. How did that develop in terms of being a sexual relationship?
I think if you ask him at this point, he would say halfway through the date he had no idea if I liked him or not.
Right.
What he didn't know was that I already had liked him for a couple months previously.
Okay. But at some point, you had to do something, say something, or he did to make it.
Yeah, at the end of the date, he asked if he could hug me, and then he asked if I kissed on first dates.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, I do. So I'm very much straightforward. I just like to get to the point. I like direct questions.
It's healthy, isn't it? Yeah.
One of the things I really like the least about monogamy is the cat and mouse. That drove me nuts.
Yeah.
Having to kind of be coy or innocent or I don't know. I didn't like the cat and mouse of not wanting to be too sexual and making sure the guy liked me for who I was. But now it's, I feel like everything's on the table when I date people now. And sexuality is okay. And maybe that's just me having to realize that being sexual is okay. It's all right. And also probably being older now, I don't give a crap about what people think. So that probably makes it a lot easier too.
Yeah, that goes a long way. And that comes from speaking from a position of, what's the opposite of scarcity? Plenty.
Abundance.
Abundance, right. To where you're not in a place in your life where if this doesn't work out with any particular person, you're perfectly happy in your life as it stands right now. Whereas were you to be single and celibate and desperately in need of some kind of sexual affection, then it would put you in a very different situation, right?
Right.
Which I think most guys are in, you know. And I think if I look back to, God, the 7 months of this year that I was largely celibate, largely by choice, I kind of felt that way, that girls would pick up on that, you know. And I felt very difficult to transition from a non-sexual relationship into a sexual one.
But the celibacy was by choice?
Well, yes and no. Mm-hmm. The truth of the matter is, you know, if I was in a situation with a super hot girl that I really connected with, then I'd go, yep, yes, please.
Yeah.
But oftentimes it just didn't work out that way, you know. Oftentimes there was some interest, but we just didn't connect on that level.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't sort of pursue. I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm not the sort of guy that wants to just fuck to get off.
Yeah.
I want to feel that genuine connection. And then sometimes you feel that someone likes you a lot more than you like them. And so that, again, is a good reason not to sleep with them, because it's just not going to end well, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's respecting people's boundaries, even if they don't know them themselves, you know.
Mm.
Do you feel like that's an obligation or not? Because let's talk, for example, about... Who is it? Reid Mihalko says, date within your species. You know, make sure you only date other people that see the world the way you do, i.e. people who are non-monogamous, polyamorous, whether they place a label on it or not.
Mm.
Whereas I like to think that I'm an equal opportunity guy, and there may be girls out there that never even contemplated that, but we could still have a wonderful, positive experience, you know?
Mm.
But do you think that because I know they're monogamous and they're looking for Mr. Right, that I have an obligation to not get involved with them because it could only end badly? Or do you think we can have a positive sexual experience together, even though they're still ultimately looking for Mr. Right, and I'm not going to be that guy?
Yeah, I think the obligation comes on you just to be honest about who you are and where you're coming from. And if you're two consenting adults, then if a woman knows she's searching for Mr. Right and you've expressed who you are and you're not going to be the one for her, then it's up to her to decide what's right. And if she can have the capacity to know that you're a good person and she enjoys spending time with you, and maybe it would be fun to have something sexual with you. But that takes a lot of inner work. I think a lot of people hear about non-monogamy and think it's okay and are on board and start a relationship with someone until the non-monogamous person goes on a date with someone else, and then they're faced with it. So as long as they are the only one, they're fine with it.
Right.
But then if you mention wanting to date someone else, that's where it all kind of falls apart. So then you're sort of backed into a corner where you're dating someone who is a monogamous person that you care about, and then you start to not want to date other people out of fear of losing this monogamous person.
Right.
I've seen plenty of people have this. And you can't help who you care about. You can't help who you have feelings for.
Right.
Personally, I have not dated outside of the poly community in 4 years. It's just easier for me. There's less. Right.
Well, and, you know, as an attractive girl, you're going to have way more opportunities within the poly community than a guy, right? Like, generally speaking, most of the couples.
Just in general, male to female, the ratio,
Yeah, most of the couples I've talked to have opened up a relationship. That's generally the way that it works, is that the girl goes, oh, wow, I've got all these hot guys that want to, you know, whereas the guy goes, oh, my God.
It's crickets chirping.
Yeah, it's a hard graft, for sure. And I don't know why that is, because you'd think there'd be equal numbers if, you know, most people come into it from a relationship, but.
I think it leans more towards men who are, I believe, wrap their head around non-monogamy.
Yeah.
I wonder. I honestly don't know what the numbers are as far as the male to female ratio, but I just think in dating in general, there are fewer women for every man, just in general, in dating.
Why?
As far as men dating, their options are less.
Right.
And then you get into the poly community, and then it gets even lower.
Right.
But I feel that there's more maybe quality over quantity in that respect. I don't know. But across the board, I feel very, very strongly for all of the men in the poly community, because it's what I hear across the board, that most men have a really difficult time finding dates. But that's I kind of feel like that's always been, especially online in general, anytime a guy's trying to date online, they have a hard time with it.
Yeah, it's the numbers, isn't it? It's the numbers game. They put 6 fake profiles on an online dating site. A girl who was very attractive, a girl who was average attractive, a girl who's not so attractive. Same with guys. Mm-hmm. And the least attractive girl got 100 times more messages than the most attractive guy. It's just that's it. That's the way we're hardwired, I think, sexually, for sure. Which is just the way it is, really, and you just got to accept that. And that's why, to me, I feel way more comfortable now meeting people in everyday life and just talking to loads and loads of people. And some of these people you'll connect with. And that seems to be working out way better for me, I think, you know. And that's why I think going to these meetups will be great, because I'll meet more people in that regard as well, you know. Now I've been, God, probably 2 years, 2 or 3 years now I've been going to meetups through SPLA and various other poly meetups. And I've met, I would say, you know, a handful of girls, and I go, yeah, very attracted to them, you know. And so I think just the more I go to, the more I'll meet, and that'll go in more of a positive direction, you know. And then if I can just find one of them to make a baby with, my life will be complete. That's what all my friends say, because my ideal originally was to find someone to have a kid with as a platonic friend, and then to date outside of that. Whereas now all my friends are saying, look, you don't want to be in a monogamous relationship, so just date, and eventually, hopefully, someone will come along that probably wants to have kids as well, and perhaps would be open to the fact that maybe your sexual relationship won't last forever, but because you're open, the end of a sexual relationship won't doom the end of a parenting relationship in the same way that a monogamous one might do.
Right.
And that, I think, is a fair comment, right?
I feel that way. I've learned, especially because of polyamory, that just because sex isn't part of a relationship anymore doesn't negate the relationship. It doesn't make the relationship a failure, or all of a sudden now you just can't be together. You can transition into a different type of a relationship, a different type of loving, caring relationship.
Yeah.
But you also have the freedom to explore and have needs met elsewhere, right. And yeah. have a loving connection with somebody else. And it's all on the table. It's all on the up and up. And as long as everyone agrees that this is what they want to do,
mm-hmm.
I don't see a problem with any of it.
Right. Fantastic. So any poly girls out there with functioning wombs that are looking for a creepy British baby?
Way to sell it.
I'm the greatest, aren't I? What a pitch guy. Oh, no. I think I'd make a good dad, wouldn't I? I'm nice. Got good genetics. Come on, big me up. Big me up.
Beat you up?
Big me up.
Oh, big you up. Yeah, you seem like...
Sell me to someone. Now. Come on.
Nigel's the greatest. I think the fact of all the effort and thought you've put into wanting a child says a lot. I think the fact that you've given so much thought and wanted that alone, I think is... And all the work you do on yourself and trying to better yourself can only translate to a really wonderful child. Because there's so many people that have children that don't work on themselves. And then that translates to a lot of issues for the kid.
Yeah.
Because their parent couldn't
sort
out their feelings.
Yeah. Had kids before they sort of sorted out themselves. Absolutely. So, all right. Well, good. That gives me hope.
So sorry. I feel like I failed you there.
We'll work on it. No, it's all good. It's all good, sweetheart. Like I said, I'm kind of in a good place in my life mentally now to where I feel like if I don't have kids, then maybe like you said, it just, you know, wasn't meant to be. And maybe I can be a parent to somebody else. You know, there are plenty of kids that need mm-hmm. great, strong parenting role models, and maybe I could be for that. You mm-hmm. know, so I'm a great believer in letting life tell its own story. And just sort of going along for it. In actual fact, I'm kind of a determinist. You know, I kind of feel like everything is fated anyway, and that we're just reading the book of our lives. And it may seem like we have free will and we're making all these choices, but ultimately, this was all written a long time ago. And all we can do is just turn the pages and enjoy the story, you know?
I agree. I think that I've definitely spent enough time worrying about how it's going to go. That if you just live it and let it happen, it all seems to sort of work out.
Yeah.
I might be a bit Pollyanna of me, but if I could take back all the time spent worrying about so many things, probably would have enjoyed some things in the past a lot more.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a fantastic sentiment to end this podcast. Thank you for coming on and talking so openly. And thank you for your friendship as a conduit to this new sort of journey that I've been going on. And I hope we get to talk a lot more, hang out a lot more. And maybe I'll come to one of these parties.
That'd be great.
Yeah, it'll be fun, eh? All right.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, sweetheart. God bless. Well, that was Denise. Isn't she great? Not sure if she's in the market to date anyone else, but either way, just being around her is enough to warm the cockles of me heart. Next week's interview is with Tish, one of my oldest friends from wrestling, back from when I was first cutting my teeth wrestling in England. We became fast friends because of how similar our world views about relationships were, and in the 15 years since, while they've gone in different directions, or at least mine have, we've maintained a genuine, enduring friendship.
Because if a guy sleeps with loads of girls, he's a stud and he's a player and he's cool with the guys. But if a girl sleeps with loads of guys, then she's labelled completely differently.
Right, and then I want a phone number.
Yeah.
So. I'll see you next week. Well, that is it. Another week on this earth, another blessing. Thank you for listening and being part of my journey. Drop me a line if you have a comment or question, or if you think you know someone who'd be a good parenting partner for me. If you like the show, help spread the word, write a review, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. I will be back next week, but until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, be kind and happy. Let love rule. Hello.